on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're welcome to the Friday edition of Game On. Busy programme to come between now and 7 o'clock. We are going to finish it with Jane Mangan looking ahead to the weekend's racing. We're going to stop off in the middle with Michael Glennon previewing the PDC World Darts Championship. And we've got plenty of soccer chat to come for the opening part of the programme. We will be hearing shortly from the Republic of Ireland manager Heimir Hallgrímsson in advance of planning for the World Cup 2026 qualification campaign. Ireland know their faith. We'll chat to you about that group in just a couple of moments time, and a big weekend of Premier League action to look ahead to as well. 51552 is our text number. You can also find the programme all across social media at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
A Friday wouldn't be a Friday without there being chaotic traffic and people wondering who's on the Late Late Show tonight, and Alan Cawley sitting across from me.
I like that intro, Damien. Thank you. It's lovely to be here, as always, on a Friday evening.
You know the way, like, for people, like, Christmas isn't Christmas without a Terry's Chocolate Orange, mm-hmm. or, you know, like a Bailey's Coffee or whatever it is. My Fridays aren't my Fridays unless I'm chatting football.
I like this. Can this carry on for the hour?
People think we don't get on. We've talked about this before.
You've said this a few times.
Yeah, but I forget people, yourself and your man, you know. I'm very worried about you.
As
I know
man,
you have a big weekend ahead.
Showbiz, baby. I have a big weekend. Go on.
Will we get
spill
this out
the
way
beans.
Now?
Get
will
it
we?
Out of the way,
so
because I'm already petrified.
I've rung ahead to the cardiac unit in the Martyr. I've rung ahead to the Beaumont A&E.
Hopefully it's not quite that bad.
You're getting the boots back on.
The boots will be coming out. I'll be rolling back the
and
ears
you know
tomorrow,
what?
Damien.
You're only a couple of hundred yards down the road from your house.
Are you coming?
What time is it?
2 o'clock.
Oh,
kick off.
I've been the Aviva for 3.
Well, you might get the first 20 minutes. I'll do all the damage in the first 20 minutes.
Gary Howlett, who played for Brighton in the 1983 FA Cup final.
Amazing, yeah.
At a time when we didn't have too many fellas playing in FA Cup finals. Himself, Michael Robinson, Jerry Ryan. There was 4 Irish players on that team.
John would know better than me.
The man outside the window is on the phone, so he'll have to come back to me. So Gary Howlett, it's a match to pay tribute and to remember his late wife. So it's you're on the Shells All-Star team.
There's a good team.
And it is quite the Shelburne team.
He's assembled a fair few players, all right, Damien, with star quality, let's just say. Not including myself in that now, but there's some great players.
You're a
great
winner.
Great, yeah. But there's great players, great names on the list, as you would expect, associated with Shelburne. But in fairness to Gary, yeah, he's been having this game, I think, the last couple of years since the sad passing of his wife Annette, and he plays it against Killester Legends also, who have a very good team. It's on at 2 o'clock in Haddon Park, but there's games before that as well. I think there's a girls match, and also there's a 5k run in the morning, so it's a bit of a day event, if you like.
So listen, there's a generation of young people who are falling in love with Shelburne because of Duffer and everything that Duffer's done and the league title. So, like, if you go back through Jason Byrne, honoured by the Soccer Writers last week, like, you know, one of the greatest goal scorer I ever saw in the League of Ireland, Tony Sheridan. Jason's playing.
No, I know that, but are you saying the greatest that you've seen?
Well, that's
high praise.
I think he'd be up there with
absolutely,
the best.
Absolutely,
yeah, no. Well, his stats back it up.
Well, we were only chatting to him last week after the awards, and I think he reckons if he played another year, he would have broken Brendan Bradley's record.
Tony Sheridan.
Legend.
He's
one of the best I've ever seen.
You'd leave your loved ones for Tony Sheridan's left foot.
What about that's as good a description as you'll ever get.
Mark Rutherford, Ollie Cahill, Trevor Molloy, James McCarthy and Brian Fenton.
Yeah.
You can try and entice Fento to go back to the
I'm
Ducks.
Looking forward to meeting those lads, actually. Yeah, I would have always admired them.
But the one that I'm best looking forward to is Paul Doolan's on the staff.
I know. I hope he's all right to me.
You'll be getting it in the ear.
Another legend. Another pity he couldn't play because was some player.
It's
Stephen Cluxton.
Is Cluxton's
on the list?
Cluxton's not on the list.
He is. Yeah.
Is he?
I wonder what he's like outside left.
Yeah, listen. You know, he has history of playing against mouthy fellas in charity football matches.
No, he's on my side, so he'll be all right.
That won't make any
he's
difference.
On my side.
Right, listen, we've got a lot of stuff to get stuck into. Busy, busy day of sport. Big news in rugby. I wanted to say, if you're going, Killester Dart Station is literally 200 yards down the road. Come out of the dart station, turn left, and listen, follow the floodlights.
Yeah.
So listen, we wish everyone well with that. Couple of big stories in terms of rugby today. Felix Jones has been released from his contract by the RFU. It might not seem that notable, but if you know the calibre of the coach that he is, there's going to be an awful lot of people on red alert for him. He's not allowed to coach a Tier 1 nation until the 1st of April, so no prospect of teaming up with Wales or Ireland or anyone else for the Six Nations. But he could be on the radar of clubs, which I think will excite an awful lot of people down in Limerick. Plenty of team news today in advance of the Investec Champions Cup, which takes place this weekend. Leinster 5 changes to the team, which beat Bristol last weekend in advance. advance of their game against Claremont tomorrow. Caelan Dorris, Liam Turner, Andrew Porter and Thomas Clarkson all come into the starting lineup. Jordy Barrett is the headline name there. He's going to make his first start there. Ulster have handed a debut to Zach Ward, the Sevens international, in advance of their game against Bordeaux. That's going to be live on Saturday Sport tomorrow afternoon. So much to look forward to there from a rugby perspective across the weekend. Now, from a Republic of Ireland perspective, we're going to hear from the Republic of Ireland manager Heimir Hallgrímsson in just a moment. Ireland have been drawn with either Denmark or Portugal, as well as Hungary and Armenia in the qualification group for the 2026 World Cup. So the winner of the Nations League playoff game between Portugal and Denmark will be in the group. Hungary, Republic of Ireland and Armenia. The top team will qualify automatically for the World Cup in 2026. The second of those four teams will advance to a playoff with a chance of qualifying for the finals in Canada, Mexico and the United States. We're going to be joined by Tony O'Donoghue in a moment. We'll chat to Alan about that as well. But let's hear from the Republic of Ireland manager reflecting on the draw in the company of Tony earlier today.
We're positive that we would be in a group of four, and early on we realised that that would happen, which is a good thing. And that was probably the biggest scare for us, was not to need to play in June an official match. Normally that's a difficult one for us. But yeah, no, it's a lot of things, and I think they have crowded the schedule a little bit, so it made it kind of difficult for the draw to be made.
You look at the draw and it's come out that we're in a four-team group, so it means that you won't have to play in the summer, and it'll be quite fast. Your World Cup campaign will be September, October, November next year.
Mm-hmm. So it's positives in that, but it could be negatives. For example, let's say that a player gets injured and he could miss out more or less all the campaign. So let's hope that everybody will be fit and ready, and we will have the team ready in September.
Let's look at the draw itself then, and the winners of Portugal and Denmark. Will you get an opportunity to watch their game in advance? And of those two, who would you prefer?
I think both tricky teams. Obviously Portugal has more history of winning, maybe higher profile players. But both of them, ball possession, creative teams. Yeah, I would say that they're similar in how they play, how they want to play. More individual quality in Portugal, but really good quality in Denmark as well. I know them pretty good. They're kind of the most technical Scandinavian team, most ball possessive of all the Scandinavian teams. And normally their players are playing high level as well. So, no, it's good teams, but I think there's possibilities in playing both of these teams, but we need to be really good at what we are doing to get points from them. But if we want to qualify, we need points from playing these teams.
It's funny, we played both Portugal and Hungary this year already. Unfortunately, perhaps you weren't in charge at that stage. Is that a regret now?
No, we have John and Paddy still, so the knowledge is there. But it's always different playing friendlies, and especially friendlies in June. They will never be as competitive as official matches, but it's good to have played them, and a win against Hungary gives confidence, and I think I would say a good game against Portugal as well. So no, it gives confidence, I would say, that we play them, so that's a good thing.
A lot of Irish fans will remember we got Portugal in the last World Cup qualifiers as well, and over there Gavin De Zuma saved a penalty from Ronaldo. And we went one up thanks to John Egan and held on to that for such a long time. And then Cristiano got two late goals that broke our heart. In the home game, we drew nil all. Maybe we don't have to fear Portugal so much.
I don't know. It's a long time since. But we just watched the goals just to refresh the memories of everyone. Yeah, and it's like I said, it's good memories. But we don't win on memories. We need to be the better team on the day when that comes, and I think it's better for us to play them earlier in the campaign rather than later.
We've also played Armenia quite recently, and that was traumatic as well to lose over there to a late goal. Are they opponents, as they are, you know, lower seeds in our group, ones that we would hope to take points off?
Yeah, that's a team. If we want to qualify, and we want to qualify, we need to win those matches. And again, we watch the highlights from those games. Just for me to see how it was, and I think it's a tricky team definitely away, the away game is they're difficult to play at home, like Hungary is difficult to play at home. And looking at their results in 2024 is all equal games, so they never lose with more than one goal, so they're always in the games until the end. So it's a tricky team, but that's a team that we need 6 points from if we want to qualify.
How do you raise the morale of the players, I guess, after the campaign that we've had so far? It finished with that heavy defeat at Wembley. I mean, obviously you've looked back on it since, and I'd like to know your reflections on not just the England game, but the previous campaign.
Well, I felt it was some good steps in regards to tactics, in regards to especially defence. And you always will need to start improving that when you want to improve things. You need to start the organisation, the defensive part, before you go to the attacking part. So I would say good steps taken. An outlier this game against England, pretty good first half. Yeah, no, we're going to play a game like a team with the strength of England in Portugal, in Denmark. So we need to be really, really solid, and I think we haven't proved that in this campaign. So positives, but we are not there yet, and we need to improve much more still to qualify for the World Cup.
Tamir Halgrimsson chatting earlier. Tony is with us. Evening, Tony.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Not too bad. You can look at the permutations here and do your virtual draw, your nightmare draw, your dream draw. This has probably turned out pretty much as well as it could have done for us.
To be honest with you, look, it could have been an awful lot worse when you think of the last draw we were involved in and got us France, Netherlands, Greece in the Euro 2024, the Nations League draw we had recently. This isn't bad at all, I think. Portugal, Denmark, look, at the top seed is always going to be the top seed and likely to win the group. But we've played all of these teams quite recently. Portugal, I mean, the one I remember, I know they beat us 3-0 in a friendly this year, but I go back to that World Cup qualifier, the last World Cup qualifying campaign we were involved in, and over in the Algarve, and John Egan scoring that great goal. And we played really well that night. I mentioned there, speaking to Hamir about the Gavin Bazuna penalty save, and it was only, gosh, that lapse of concentration at the end and two outstanding headers from Cristiano Ronaldo that gave them the victory. And the home game, the reverse fixture, was nil-all. Mm. And nil-all or 1-1 seems to be our favourite Denmark score, doesn't it? I mean, yes, we got heavily beaten by them once, 5-1, that game that ended up defining Martin O'Neill's, I suppose, tenure. But every other game we played them, we were kind of equal to them. So as first seeds go, I definitely prefer them to a France or an England or a Germany. So, that's okay. Hungary, you know, we've beaten them this year. Goals from Adam Ida and Troy Parrott. We drew with them in Budapest during the Stephen Kenny era. Again, nothing that we should be too concerned about. And then Armenia. Well, that's probably a defining result of the Stephen Kenny era in a way, to be beaten 1-0 away from home in Yerevan from another shot outside the box that went past Guivín Kelleher this time. That was shocking. And even though we beat them 3-2, in the reverse fixture in Dublin. I don't know if you remember this particular game, but oh my goodness, we were 2-0 up and then we conceded again two goals, very sloppy goals, and it was only a Robbie Brady penalty in added time that snatched victory from the jaws of a draw, at least, if not the jaws of defeat, the way we were playing. Our confidence was gone at that point. So our confidence is still very brittle, but this is a group that we can get results in. This is a group, particularly if we look at Armenia and look to get full points off them and then try and get something against Hungary. And what will be Portugal or Denmark. But of all the top seeds, you know, these are ones that we know so well, we shouldn't fear. And in a group, in terms of travel for the fans, well, Armenia, Yerevan is a long way away, but it's a lovely city. We've been there before, and Budapest is one of the best places to visit. Portugal, be it the Algarve or Lisbon, fantastic. And Denmark, well, we know well how nice Copenhagen is for Irish fans. So, yeah, there's something for everyone here. And I think if Hamir Hallgrimsson can I suppose, improve the squad, fix the broken confidence and the morale, and maybe make us more solid defensively. And if we can find a decent midfield combination, I think we do have the talent up front, hopefully. And I think we do have the defenders and a couple of good goalkeepers. But yeah, I'd be quietly optimistic that we could maybe get ourselves to a playoff. At that point, of course, there's a lot of work to be done still because, you know, there's only four more teams to be added with the 12 group winners. So a playoff won't be simple if we were to get that far. But yeah, quietly optimistic.
Yeah, and Alan, if we're magnanimous and realistic about this, we've no right to expect automatic qualification with Portugal or Denmark in the group. But if you look at it as a three-team group between Hungary, the Republic of Ireland and Armenia, and the winner gets a playoff, you can be slightly more optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, but we've been here before, Damien, in that we've been quietly optimistic in a lot of groups in recent times. And if you look at that one, I would agree with a lot of what Tony has said in terms of it could have been a lot worse. But at the same time, I think you have to be realistic in terms of where we're at right now, and we're at a really low ebb. You look at Armenia, they're obviously coming out of Nations League C. They've beaten Latvia twice in their games, picked up 7 points in that. North Macedonia beat them twice, but they were beaten by the Faroe Islands. So realistically, we'd be looking at that thinking we should be beating them. But because of the expectation, I suppose, that we've put on ourselves in recent times, and sometimes unrealistic even against lower ranked teams, we've come unstuck against them, and they've been the real tricky ones. I think we're actually a lot better when we play against some of the better teams, when there's little expectation on us. If you look at Hungary as well, they had a disappointing Euros, went out of the group stage, but they've been in Nations League A playing against Germany, Netherlands and Bosnia, so they'll be obviously a lot stronger than us. But certainly in terms of one-off games, I think we're capable of picking up a result here and there, whether that will be enough. But I think that on the basis of what we've seen there with the teams, Portugal and Denmark, as Tony said, the top seeds, you would have to be aiming at a playoff at best.
Tony, I like his honesty in terms of his assessment of where we're at, and like he has brought, I think, a sense of realism to the expectation. And do you share his views around the progression that he feels we've seen in this Irish team over the course of his reign?
I like his honesty as well, but I still worry that he's looking at this project with the eyes of a consultant, and he must be reminded, I think, that it's his job to fix whatever is wrong with the Irish team. It's his job to get results. He can be honest in his assessment of how we collapsed against England or how we did in other games, but you know, the buck stops with him. He was brought in specifically to try and improve us and to qualify. And his honest assessment is refreshing in some ways. He's neutrally said about how he feels about our chances in this group, and that's all well and good. But I mean, I do think at some point I'll want to hear him banging the drum and motivating the players and putting us out to try and get big results against Armenia, Hungary and whoever the top seed might be.
Do you share that optimism?
Well, yeah, he's the manager. Of course, the responsibility lies with him. I do like his honesty, but he's here to get results, not to be honest with us. We can all see exactly what he's saying, and I suppose it is refreshing that a manager comes out and says something similar. A lot of them can try and paper over that, but we all see with our own eyes what's happening, and we are at a low ebb. It's very difficult at the moment, Damien. You only have to look at the players playing at the highest level and the difficulties that we have. Tony outlined two or three of the problems, the biggest problem for me being in that midfield area. We saw Nathan Collins pushed in there against England, which I thought worked to a degree in the first half, certainly. Will it be a case that we'll see something similar? He now has, I think, the big positive of this as well, the four-team group, is that he will have the June friendlies to work on things. I think that's important for him as well. We've come unstuck in those games, particularly the competitive ones in that window over a recent campaign. So I think that's a big positive as well. And you'd like to think, look, when the game comes around with a playoff as well, even though it's important that we try and win that, the playoff that we have, I think I would be viewing that as an extra two games as well in terms of preparation for this. Then you go into the June friendlies, more preparation, and hopefully we're ready to hit the ground running come September.
Okay, Tony, before we let you go, we spoke last night with kind of hope and expectation around Shamrock Rovers. I'm not sure I thought it would be as convincing as it looked for them, like a fantastic result on what has been an unbelievable European campaign for them.
Ah, my hat is off. I mean, I have to say it was a terrific performance. It was a sort of performance that other teams that we thought were ranked higher than the Irish team would come to this country and soak up a little early pressure and then hit us on the break and run out comprehensive winners. Instead, after an early scare because Pico Lopez was done by the Bosnian score up, and Savic had a shot that Leon Poles, who deserves a lot of credit considering his position has been under immense scrutiny, he made a brilliant save early in the game, and that gave them the platform to go on and be dominant. They were outstanding, none more so than Johnny Kenny, by the way. He really, really showed different aspects to his game, you know, his pace and running in behind, obviously, his hold-up play, his general awareness of who's around him, and he was able to mix it very, very well. He's probably not long for this league, that's the problem, and the same probably has to be said. You alluded to it yesterday, Damien, Neil Ferrugia. I asked him about, you know, would he be with Rovers after the game last night? Would he be with them, not just next season, for the continuation of the campaign? And he was only looking ahead as far as the Chelsea game. That's all he wanted to concentrate on. So you know what that means, don't you? So an outstanding performance by Rovers. Great credit to the management team, to Stephen Bradley and his team in particular. The way they've learned from Europe over the years, and the way they're managing the games now, and using their experience. And, you know, to be fair, the players that came on as well, you know, Graham Burke, Aaron Green, Danny Mandroyu, Jack Byrne was magnificent. They have a strong bench, but the starters even better. It was a magnificent performance, and fair play to them.
Alan, like, we talk about players being too good for this league. If that's an argument that people talk about, you could even say the same thing now, or people will say the same thing about Stephen Bradley. Like, it was a tactical masterclass last night in terms of landing a punch early and then capitalising on knowing the opponent was going to have to chase the game.
I think the biggest compliment you can give Stephen Bradley, he's learned from the experiences before, Damien, because if you think back of all those league titles that they've won, when they've gone into Europe, they've let themselves down. And I think, not that he's let himself down, I just think he's been caught out maybe a little bit tactically. But this year, if you look at all the games so far, he's learned so much from previous campaigns, and they've been outstanding, as you say. One big change, and Tony mentioned those, if you think Graham Burke, Mandrew, Jack Byrne, they're all your kind of flair players, luxury players, if you like. He's gone away from that, gone into European games. He plays now Ferrugia centrally, legs, energy, the likes of Dylan Watts as well, and they're brilliant. Gary O'Neill, Johnny, obviously, with the pace up front. Funny, I met Johnny last Saturday in Sligo, and I've never seen him as happy one, but so settled and content with his football. And he spoke about the fact that he has to go back to Celtic, but it was almost like kind of thinking, I'm enjoying it so much here, I want to hang on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because now that they are into the knockout stages, can they maybe get him back for a spell? But I know Celtic are obviously monitoring this, and you mentioned, Damien, about lads viewing the league, and people suggest that maybe they're too good for the league players as well. I think what these lads are doing on a European stage actually elevates them above that and puts them in the frame. We're talking about Heimer Hallgren in now, and picking a squad and assembling a squad. When you think of some of the performances from a couple of those lads, one lad that never gets a mention is Josh Honohan as well, has been absolutely outstanding. And that's an area of the pitch on that left side where he's playing for Shamrock Rovers that we're struggling at the moment. So I think a few of these lads have put themselves in the picture potentially for getting picked in the squad.
Yeah. It's funny because Heimir Hallgrimsson was asked about Shamrock Rovers as well, and he passed on his congratulations, saying obviously it's good for the league, it's good for the reputation of the country. But then when he talked about the players, he said it's good for the players because there'll be plenty of eyes on them now, plenty of people, you know, following them because they're making a name for themselves. And he said, you know, they could go on to have great careers for themselves. And that rankled with me a bit, because you'd like to think that they could have great careers in this country if the game continues to develop.
The magic plane that gets them international call-ups.
Hopefully that plane is long gone.
Listen, we're miles over on time for this. Tony, thanks for being with us as always. Our correspondent,
cheers,
Tony O'Donoghue. Alan's going to stay with us. We're going to chat Premier League after the break.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Football. A couple of texts in. One telling us, reminding us, saying to us we should take note of the fact that Rovers are playing Mickey Mouse teams.
Nonsense.
Another one in to 51552. Is Alan on the Late Late Show tonight? Now, they are announcing the last remaining five dancers.
Don't tell them, Damien. Don't tell them.
With the stars.
Don't let it out of the bag yet.
You'd look great in sequins. Sorry, I should say, you do look great in sequins. Right, busy Premier League weekend. Fergal Brennan, how are you?
Very good indeed.
Good, thanks for being with us. I'm looking at the fixtures for the weekend. You have the leaders, Liverpool at Fulham. You have Arsenal at Everton. The one that jumps out, though, is Sunday afternoon, Man City against Man United. With the form line, is this the first Manchester derby in recent seasons where City might not be the overwhelming favourites?
Quite possibly. There's been periods during Guardiola being in charge where Manchester United have got good results against them and they've got good results at the Etihad. That's not been the case in the last few seasons. I think City have got 3 wins in a row. So much of this is based around what is going on at Manchester City at the moment, and 1 win in 10, it just doesn't sound real to be talking about Guardiola and Manchester City and that particular statistic. They are favourites for me still in terms of the standing that they are, the players that they've got, the fact that they're at home, the fact that I've said this for the last couple of weeks, this dip, this malaise needs to change soon. But I also just think Manchester United, there's still a bit too much chaos about them to go and get a win at the Etihad. I really think that. I watched the game against Victoria Pilsen last night, and they were good in patches. Amorim, very animated on the sideline. You can see that he's trying so hard to get his methods and his philosophy across to the players, and it's kind of starting to work, but there's still a huge amount to do to kind of get his blueprint across to this set of players. Whereas Man City, for all of their troubles in the last few weeks and months, they're still a much more cohesive unit. So I'd still be firmly going for Manchester City. Just as I say, it does have to turn at some point. Yeah. And Man United, small steps, but there's still a long way to go for them.
Imagine though, Alan, the pressure on Pep if United, of all teams, were to get a result this weekend.
Yeah, and who would have thought we'd have this situation where 1 win in 10, I think it is now, Damien, and for the first time he just looks like a normal manager. It's in some ways it's nice to see that, because he's been so amazing over a period of time, and it's kind of nice to watch just how he's going to handle this, and I don't think he's handling it very well at this moment in time. But if you look at the game on Sunday, you'd still fancy them, but I think at this moment, it's two very ordinary teams. Amorim has come in. I'm a fan. Everything he's done in terms of, I suppose, the way he spoke and his approach to it, I think, has been very impressive. But he still has the same players at his disposal as what all the other managers had. And it's been very difficult even for him to try and assemble a team. By the looks of things, because there's so much chopping and changing, he's obviously trying to give them all an opportunity. I think he's gone a little bit too far. He's given them too much of an opportunity. If you look at Maresca when he came in, how clinical he was in the decisions that he made from day one, and left some of them out of the squad that he doesn't want. I think that's the approach Amorim should have went with, and maybe he will now in the next couple of weeks. But certainly in terms of the game on Sunday, even though Man City are struggling, really struggling, and I never thought I'd see them go a period like this where it's 1 win in 10 in all competitions, I still find it very hard to fancy Manchester United away from home against them.
Fergal, we mentioned Maresca. You know, you look at Chelsea, 4 points behind Liverpool, albeit Liverpool have a game in hand. Chelsea, 4 wins and a draw in their last 5 games. Like, the game against Brentford this weekend, it's a real opportunity for Chelsea just to maintain this pressure on Liverpool, and like they probably are the kind of sleeper in all of this conversation.
They are, and I think the point that Alan makes there about the way that Maresca has handled the situation since he's come in, it wasn't easy at the start. He had so many players and so many decisions to make. But I also think that because he's very clearly split the squad in terms of these are the Premier League players and these are the Cup and the Conference League players, that had a huge trip out to Kazakhstan yesterday, but the majority of that team won't play. They've been back in London, resting, recuperating and building for this game this weekend. So even though they've got a lot of games, because they've got so many players and they've got such a division within the squad, that the manager has said, listen, you need to prove yourself in the League Cup, in the FA Cup when it comes around in Europe, and then I'll give you a chance in the Premier League. All the while, his kind of Premier League 11 or 15 are still performing. And this weekend, they play Brentford, who are absolutely 2 complete polar opposites, home and away. Incredible at home. Nobody can beat them at home, but away, they struggle. So I think Chelsea will keep themselves in the conversation. As always, end of February, start of March, that's when we really start to see the kind of lie of the land. And City will still have a massive say in this. Liverpool have been fantastic. Will there be a little dip? Arsenal are still there or thereabouts. But Chelsea are doing everything they should be doing and a bit more, and I'd fancy another win for them this weekend.
Yeah, Alan, like Liverpool at home to Fulham, you'd fancy Liverpool to get a result. Arsenal at home to Everton, you'd fancy Arsenal to get a result. But the congestion of games, this is why this Liverpool's dominance in the Champions League is as important to them, because these fixtures could potentially start to stack up on a Liverpool squad that's not the deepest.
No, and that would be the worry. And I think Fergal makes a good point about Chelsea. That's the luxury they have, especially if they're looking to chase down the likes of Liverpool or Arsenal, is that they're not competing, I suppose, with the extremities in terms of how difficult the Champions League is. And that's obviously what Arsenal and Liverpool will be trying to do whilst maintaining their challenge at the top. So that's a major plus for Chelsea. But that's the position to find themselves in, Damien, in terms of being such a good club, and the players are well used to that as well. I think it'll be a trickier game against Fulham than what people are saying. Mm. Fulham have been very good. Marco Silva, and one thing he's very good at, Marco Silva, is setting up a team to try and obviously pick up a result, especially away from home. So that will be a difficult
tie. Liverpool have real problems breaking down in a resolute opponent midweek.
Yeah, and even if you go back, I know it was the only game they lost, but the Forest game as well, they found it very difficult. Mm. So I don't think that'll be as easy as people are suggesting. I definitely think Arsenal win this weekend. I think Chelsea will. But that could be a tricky one for Liverpool. But it makes it interesting when you do have two or three teams at the top. And even though they've got off to such an unbelievable start, they are going to hit a blip at some point. Yeah.
Fergal, the other one that jumps out for me is Spurs away to Southampton. So Southampton, obviously bottom of the table, 5 points from 15 games. But I couldn't get over Ange Postecoglou last night and the extent to which he came out against Timo Werner. Like, we've all been in press conferences where you've asked a question and expect a manager to completely kick the touch on it. And like, you can see the frustration that's building in Postecoglou. And you would wonder at a club like Spurs, with the management structure they have, how long that marriage is going to last.
Yeah, I'd agree completely in terms of his answers, not just about Werner, but about various things. You're so used to managers just giving a stock answer, and particularly someone like him, he's so defensive of his players. Every time there's a poor performance, every time they lose a game that they're expected to win, he shoulders it. I'm the manager, the buck stops with me, etc., etc. And he really went in hard on Werner. Arguably deserved. He was very poor in the first half, but to do it so publicly, I would agree that indicates that all really isn't well in terms of the relationship between him and certain players. They're not really getting on board with what he's trying to do and what he wants from them, and particularly in terms of effort. That was his big thing from last night. He knew going to Ibrox, the connection obviously that he has with Celtic, he knew that there'd be a lot of attention on him. It'd be a really difficult night, and he's asking the senior Spurs players, as he called them, to at least put in a shift for him, run harder, win their battles, get out of Glasgow with at least a point, if not a win. And they were very, very fortunate last night. They could have easily lost it. So this weekend, they're playing, in terms of the rankings, the worst team in the Premier League. But it's still the same issue with Tottenham. It's so difficult to gauge how they're going to perform. Because even the Chelsea game last weekend, fantastic for the first 20 minutes, and then they just collapse. So it's very, very hard to gauge where they're at. And Postecoglou, unfortunately, at the moment, doesn't really seem to have a handle on it either.
The problem with that, Damien, and I've defended Postecoglou a lot and praised him a lot, is Timo Werner is the least of his problems. So coming out hammering Timo Werner is not going to fix what's wrong with Spurs. And I think he needs to take some responsibility himself because of the approach and the naivety in which they play as well. I would have much preferred, he's brought Werner in. He came in as a loan signing and then obviously wanted to sign him after that as well. But he's the least of his problems. I would actually much prefer, if he was going to be public and criticise someone, actually come out with one of the main big boys and have a go at one of them and maybe send out a message to the rest of them. Timo Werner is the least of his problems. So I don't think, sometimes you have to choose your fights wisely. I don't think that was the right move on Postecoglou's part.
Maybe Werner doesn't have the ear of the chairman that some of the other players in the dressing room, if they were bigger wheels, do. But, you know,
potentially, but
these are the policies.
But I think he needs to take a lot of responsibility. They were poor again last night against Rangers. Yeah. Very poor.
Yeah. Listen, we'll leave it there. Fergal, thanks so much for being with us. Enjoy the weekend's action. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Thanks very much.
And Alan, good luck tomorrow.
Thank you. I'll need it.
Drop me a text. Let me know how you are.
Are you not coming up to see me?
Well, see, I have to be, like, genuinely, I have to be in the Aviva for 3.
Yeah.
I could probably get, like, I could get 20 a few minutes in.
I'll do the damage in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, right. Listen,
and be gone.
I'll see how it goes. But if you need, like, if you need somewhere to come home and recuperate afterwards, I'll make sure the kids have the ice packs ready to go and
no
the
problem.
On.
It'll be like that after the Dancing with the Stars as well.
You can actually see Alan doing. So is Alan going into Dancing with the Stars? You'll find out on the Late Late Show tonight when they unveil the last 5. You know, you're
good
very
evening.
Supple looking.
Good evening. Yeah, a bit of training.
Mind yourself. Got much more to come on the programme. We're going to be looking ahead to the World Darts Championship and previewing the weekend's racing after this.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Ange, very welcome back to the programme. We are going to chat about one of the big events in the festive calendar and a big part of Christmas for an awful lot of people. Michael Glennon from RTE Online is with me in studio. How are you?
Good, Damien. How are you?
I should have... I can't even remember the name of the
Chase
tune.
The Sun.
Chase the Sun.
Yes.
Yeah, because back in my independent radio days, I worked for a couple of radio stations, would have played it off the air. So, do, can mean only one thing.
You can add in the sound effects
it's
later.
It's dart season.
Yep.
Listen, there's going to be so much focus on Luke Littler, and there was great romance and interest in his progression last year. He's the man who is going to dominate a lot of the coverage in advance of events getting underway this weekend. Is he a romantic favourite, or in sporting terms, a genuine favourite for this?
Well, he's the bookies' favourite, certainly. And of course, it's a great story as well. And he was beaten in the final last year. A lot of people would have wanted him to win it to make the fairy tale come true in the end. It was a fairy tale in itself, get a 16-year-old getting to the world final. He was beaten by a better player on the night as well. But no, I mean, the bookmakers have Luke Littler favourite for this tournament. He's been playing well all year. It would not be no surprise for him to win it, but at the same time, it would still be a phenomenal achievement. People mightn't be surprised, but a 17-year-old winning a World Darts Championship is unheard of.
But he has backed it up. He hasn't been a flash in the pan. And like, people, listen, if you're not invested in darts, as let's be very honest, most people for most of the year aren't.
Yep.
You know, you might see him on, I think he's on a toy ad campaign for one of the retailers and everything else. But he's had quite the year, and he has proven himself to be a fella who's no flash in the pan.
No, and he's cut across, so he's changed the sporting landscape, and he's become bigger than darts as well. So he was on Jonathan Ross, as you say. He has all his advertising. He has kind of opted out of a lot of the players' championships events that lads would have been, the floor events that guys would have cut their teeth on throughout the year. But, I mean, he's over a million in career earnings in the last year. He won 10 PDC titles. He won the Premier League. Like, before the start of last year's World Championship, he wouldn't have been mentioned for the Premier League, but he was good enough in the World Championships to get into the Premier League. He won that. He won the Grand Slam. A few events now were majors where he would have been expected to do well that he went out early. So he's not infallible, or he's not unbeatable. He's just having a very good year, and when he plays his best, he just looks unbeatable.
Sorry, was that £1 million in earnings in the last year, or £1 million career? Like,
well, it did. That would have been at the start of his career.
But to contextualise that, he's 18 on the 21st of January next.
Yes.
So that is a remarkable... But I think, listen, you don't hear that many stories of him like going mad or anything else. He seems to be a very solid working class, get me a kebab after, and, you know, there's no airs and graces about him.
No, absolutely. And he hangs out with his mates, he plays the PlayStation, he's on his phone, he's on his social media. That's it, really. And, I mean, you can just tell that he plays a lot, or he's practicing a lot of darts, so he's not out doing the dog on it at all, because you can tell in the results that he's focused and he just loves playing darts.
Yeah, brilliant. So listen, the majors haven't been for him this year, but Luke Humphries, the defending champion, is the man who's showing the sporting form line.
He did have a dip during the middle of the... Sorry, we won the match play in the middle of the year, but over the last, the Grand Slam and the Grand Prix wasn't great. Went out in the first... Didn't get out of the group stages of the Grand Slam, but the most recent major event, the Players' Championship, he came through that very well and beat Luke Littler in the final. So he's the guy who he's second favourite for the tournament. I think he's just in a real... he's 28, 29, a real good age of maturity to back up his win last year. So, I mean, there's no way to discount him. As it happens, because of the seedings and because of Luke Littler's run-up just in the last year, they're both on the same side of the draw, so they would meet in a semi-final. It wouldn't be a final like last year.
Yeah, but that'll draw quite the crowd as well. Yeah. Seven Irish in action. The unfortunate thing about all of this is this night next week we're going to be getting ready for an all-Irish meeting in the first round. But so listen, one of them will certainly fall at the first hurdle. But like, again, there's good Irish form that we can look at in advance of the championship.
Absolutely. So that's Willie O'Connor against Dylan Slevin, the winner to play Dimitri Vandenberg. It's good to get a guaranteed Irish into the second round, along with the three guys, Josh Rock, Daryl Gurney and Brendan Dolan, whose seeds take them into that. It's funny enough that we were talking about youth and how it's a young man's game these days, but Mickey Mansell from Tyrone, he got into the semi-final of the the Grand Slam, and he's age 51. It would have been his biggest run in a major tournament ever, and that's only a couple of months ago. So Mickey is he's coming good. He's like a fine wine, you know.
Yeah, if only we could say that about the lot of us. I'm trying to think of what the contrast is in terms of analogies. One man who sees him perhaps hasn't aged well, but still third seed is Michael van Gerwen. So, you know, there's a lot of people will have great expectations on him based on what he has done in recent years. But if form hasn't been great, but he's a fellow who has risen to the occasion like this on so many occasions.
Yeah, so when Michael plays his A game, he again looks unbeatable. Unfortunately, he hasn't been producing his A game as much this year. I just give you one statistic that this year for his TV win percentage is 60%, which is good. You're winning more than you're losing, but that was 70% last year and 80% the year before. So you can kind of see the decline. What the problem is that when Michael was dominating the game over the last decade, his B game would be enough to beat everybody, but now it's not.
I was looking at it, it's like 2005 he made his BDO debut. He's in the PDC since 2007. Like, he's got like two decades of business under his belt. Like, it's only natural that Mother Time would catch up on you at some point.
Yeah, and he's relatively young in darts terms as well. Yeah, it's just, honestly, the quality has risen so much in the pool that there is now 25 guys who play well on the night and can beat Michael unless he's playing well, and that wasn't the case before.
In terms of the other name that I know jumps out for you, you're expecting Gary Anderson to potentially run back the passage of time.
Yes, so Gary is on a good side of the draw, and when you say a good side of the draw, it's a draw that doesn't include either of the Lukes, but he's been playing very well. Now, he's dropped down to 14th in the order of merit, but he's been playing very well, so he actually has the best three dart average over the last year. So it's funny, because I was looking up another statistic that Luke Littler is the favourite to win the tournament. But if you take any of the individual criteria for averages, checkouts, clinical checkouts, or big checkouts, he's second in all those, but he's second to different players. But there's so many categories that he is second in. He's the favourite because of that.
Yeah, okay. It's funny, like, so it starts on Sunday, it runs until the 3rd of January. Like, we always talk about, say, the World Snooker Championship. If this was the opening weekend, we'd be talking about this test of endurance and the mental strength and everything that's required. We don't talk about that in the Ali Pali for some reason. I know, like, listen, the matches are shorter in duration, but it's a far more intense environment. And, you know, people who've been there that have enjoyed it will tell you what it's like. That, you know, it's more than just darts. It's mindset, it's approach, it's experience, it's ability to handle the frantic nature of it that will ultimately get someone over the line when we roll around to the 3rd of January 2025 to crown a champion.
Yeah, it's all those ingredients, because it's a stats-based game and there's numbers. It's like a circular calculator on the board. Everything is done. But it's actually how you deal with the pressure, how you deal with things going against you. You know, you can play your best game in your bedroom all day long, but it's when 3,500 people are shouting and screaming, you're on a bad run, can you get it together? And that's why I think Luke Humphries is best placed to do that, because he's called Cool Hand Luke for a reason. Nothing really seems to faze him. A little dip in the middle of the year that showed that he does have temperament issues, but really, overall, this tournament is set up for him. And I think if they meet in the semi-final, I'm going for Humphries to win that and then to win it out.
Okay. There's a far more talented man outside the window who, in the time that we've been talking, has managed to get the music. So, you know, listen, you don't have to put up with my dodgy version of it. You'll have plenty of coverage on the RT Sport website over the course of the next couple of weeks. And I know we're going to be getting you to contribute to various programmes as well. So, Humphries for you, and maybe a couple of fairy tale stories for all the years back as well.
Yeah, I'll give you one dark horse, Wessel Niemann. Kind of an unknown guy from the Netherlands, did brilliantly on the development tour. He's kind of sixth favourite. People might not have heard of him, but he's a good outside bet.
Okay, we'll wait and see how it plays out. Michael Glennon, thank you for your expertise and your insight as always.
Thank you.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
And Jane Mangan is with us as she is each Friday. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm fresh after watching Gavin Cromwell's Stumptown win the cross country at Cheltenham today. A couple of bubbles burst at the Cheltenham meeting today. Hopefully that doesn't happen tomorrow.
Well, there, and it's probably not the busiest of weekends of the year. Is there an element of maybe the calm before the storm in advance of the madness that's going to be unleashed across Christmas?
Most definitely, yeah. We've probably seen most of the big horses run with their preparation for the likes of the King George, the Christmas Hurdle, the Savills Chase and all those good races at Leopardstown in mind. But in saying that, we have domestic action at Fairy House and Navan across the weekend. We have Cork today, and there is, of course, the Cheltenham December meeting, which has, for me, declared small fields. You know, that's just the one disappointment. There isn't maybe... There's much bigger fields in Ireland than there is in the UK for some reason.
Any reason you can put that down to, or is it just...
We have less racing.
Yeah.
And we have more competitive racing.
Okay.
There's a number of factors, but it'll just be... For this weekend, we have, I think, bigger fields.
Okay. We'll stick with Cheltenham, as you mentioned there, the December Cheltenham Gold Cup, 1:50 tomorrow afternoon. Tight enough field, with the exception of Dan Skelton's Madara, who appears to be the strong favourite.
Yeah, he wasn't favoured this morning. It was Fugitive last year's winner was favoured, but he's been usurped at the top of the market. 11 declared runners. There's no Irish interest in this race, but Sir Alex Ferguson's Il Redotto will have his... supporters after he won the Paddy Power last time. A big call-up for Olive Nichols, Paul Nichols' daughter, who claims 7. She takes over from Freddie Gingell, who took a heavy fall at Taunton yesterday and replaces him because he cannot take the ride. I do like Madara. He won at the Dublin Racing Festival last year for Sophie Leach. This is going to be his second run for Dan and Harry Skelton. I thought he was eye-catching over course and distance last time, and he's probably justified his favourite. But only 11 runners, but it looks like every single one of them has a legitimate chance. It's quite a deep race. Mm.
And the other notable race is the Albert Bartlett. And again, listen, you could throw a blanket over much of the market to look at the betting so far. And is it Skyjack Hijack is really the horse to watch?
Well, he's a very interesting horse. This is a 3 mile grade 2 for novices, and this guy has won 6 in a row. It's an unusual feat for a hurdler to be going for 7 wins in a row. He's officially rated 131, or 138, sorry, but I still think he's on an upward trajectory. He's been really well placed. Jonathan Burke, the Cork jockey, rides Clondaw General for Kim Bailey. An interesting runner from France, David Cotan, sends over Jet Blue. But again, not a big field, no Irish runner, and Skyjack Hijack so far would be the story of the race if he could make it 7 in a row. I don't think these... You know, it's run at Cheltenham this weekend, and, you know, there's graded status on it. But I don't think they're the strongest of renewals. One of the best races tomorrow, I think, is actually the Triumph Trial. It's for juveniles, where Lavender Hill Mob and Ambiente Amigo represent James Owen and the Gredley family. They have really good chances. But keep an eye out for Gavin Cromwell and Keith Dunne, who are on the board today, courtesy of Stumptown. They will have total luck in that juvenile race. He was very good when he won at Navan on his debut.
The racing at home this weekend, you've touched upon it, Navan and Fairy House. The race of the weekend, like it's very, you'd be up before your breakfast now tomorrow morning to get to Fairy House, a 11:30 start, and the opening race, the beginner's chase, is the one that catches your eye.
It does, and you can get the breakfast at Fairy House, you know, if you want to get on the road. This is a proper race. You know, there was a theme of the season that we didn't get started until maybe even a month later than usual because of the dry ground, and as a result a number of these horses have to clash where they wouldn't ordinarily clash, and Willie Mullins is sending out 3 very good hurdlers over fences in tomorrow's beginner's chase, the first race at Fairy House. The Triumph Hurdle winner from last year, Majborough, still only a 4-year-old, a fascinating runner over fences. Tully Hill, the horse that was the choice of Paul Townend and a one-time favourite for the Supreme Novices, he runs in the race. An Asian Master, also for Willie Mullins, but for the Costello family, who ran so well in the Supreme last year when he finished 4th. 1, 2, 3, top 3 in the betting. That beginner's chase doesn't have graded status. It's not run at Cheltenham, but that is the race of the weekend.
In terms of markers and eyes to the future, and, you know, is this
in
one
terms part? Of those 3 horses would probably be favourite for any graded race run at Cheltenham this weekend if they ran in it.
Okay.
But this is their first run over fences. We, number one, have to find out whether they can jump fences, and number two, if they retain the same amount of ability over fences as they did over hurdles. They're very young horses. Some improve, some don't.
So certainly worth getting in the car early, or, you know, wandering down to Fairy House for the breakfast roll if you're able to get there for 11:30. So that's the race.
You get more than a breakfast roll in Fairy House now.
Would you? But you see, I know my place though, Jane. You know, I'm probably I don't know if I qualify for anything higher than an El Crumbly breakfast roll along the way. You know, I'm a man of simple means.
If anybody gets out of bed nice and early in these cold mornings, they deserve a good breakfast.
Brilliant. Listen, enjoy the racing across the weekend and the culinary advice, which is always important, particularly when you're on the road at the weekends. And thanks so much for being with us. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Damien.
That's Jane Mangan, giving me an appetite as I head home for me dinner and looking forward to the weekend. Thanks to her, as always. Thanks to Max Falvey, who was our broadcast coordinator tonight. John Farrell produced the programme. Andrew Dupuyer is on the way with the Chart Show from Damien O'Mara. All of us here until we chat again. Have yourselves a lovely weekend.